SGO Oswego, W249 BC Mattydale, W261 AC Oswego, WTKW HD2 Bridgeport, ESPN Radio.
You know, I had this cheer trying to get somebody to make some noise. It's sad. Sickening, really.
Somehow they coached me into doing this.
On the run out, Georgetown Braswell comes out of nowhere and swipes it away against the window.
I need to switch companies if Pauly was Employee of the Year.
There was a vote between his mother and father, and it was a split decision.
And now they're having fun.
See Putty throw it up.
Oh, okay. Okay, buddy.
Quincy's monster.
To the rim for Gurriel.
I saw some split things on the ground. I said, yo, is that a dude?
Syracuse right back the other way. Dolezal in transition lays it in, gets the friendly roll. Gerard, a deep three. Got it. Fans might want to get used to seeing that.
This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte.
Good afternoon, everyone. Glad to have you with us. Stephen Fonte, Pauly Sibilia with you today up until 2 o'clock, and we want to hear from you. 315-437-7644. It's the new look, Orange Nation. Pauly's going to see if he can handle this show in addition to his other vast responsibilities.
That has gotten a lot of run. That's gotten a lot of run. The vast.
Yeah.
The vast responsibilities has gotten a lot of run.
Where does this rank in terms of the importance of your responsibilities?
This is number one. This is number one.
All right.
Top priority.
That's a good answer. Number one, at least for the next 2.
Yeah.
For you, Eric Devendorf set to join us at 12:30, as he does at that time throughout the entire college basketball season on Mondays. And then our good friend Heather Prusak, SU grad, now works at WIVB in Buffalo. She'll join us at 1 o'clock. To talk about the Buffalo Bills heading back to the AFC title game for the first time in some 27 years. We'll get to NFL in hour number 2, Pauly. We begin, though, with SU basketball. And a rough one on Saturday. You know, a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago now, Pittsburgh came to the Dome. Syracuse led that game by 18. They were cruising along in the first half, and then Pitt just kind of scratched and clawed its way back into it. Didn't lead until 8 seconds to go. It felt like Syracuse gave that one away. Pitt came here and stole it. I thought that was a brutal loss, and it was. This one on Saturday felt worse for a lot of reasons because the Orange didn't give this one away. Pitt was just the better team in the second half, just dominated the Orange in that second half. Syracuse gave up 64 points after intermission. I led the postgame show with Demetrius Nichols asking him that question, Pauly, which loss was worse, the first one to Pitt or the second one? We agreed it was the second one. Where do you stand on that?
It was uglier. And if that's possible to be uglier than giving up an 18-point lead. But yeah, 64 points in the second half. That's all defense. It's the rebounding for this basketball team is terrible. Terrible. It's if they don't get that fixed, the past two games have shown a weakness in this team that is, I mean, that's as bad as it gets. 64 points in the second half. Syracuse is usually a very, very good defensive team.
Yeah, certainly weren't on Saturday. Most points given up since the NCAA tournament when they lost to David Robinson. They gave up 65 points in the second half of that game to David Robinson and Navy way back when in the 80s. This was the second most points given up in a half by a Jim Boeheim coach team. You mentioned the rebounding. It is not a coincidence that in the four losses, Syracuse has been out-rebounded by double digits. Lost to Pitt twice. They lost to Rutgers. They lost to North Carolina. And in all of those cases, the first three losses, it was 16 or more they lost the rebounding battle by. It was just 12 on Saturday, but in the second half in particular, Pitt did whatever it wanted to do. They scored in transition. They scored from the outside. You know, they scored on putbacks. And conversely, Syracuse couldn't make a shot. 3 for 22 from three-point range. And so there are definitely, you know, there are definitely two ends of the floor, offense and defense. I guess let's start with the defense. At some point, we got to touch on the offense, though. And it does feel like this team is very much live by the three, die by the three. But from a defensive perspective, you're absolutely right. Rebounding is going to continue to bite this team until they figure it out. And it doesn't seem like Barama Sidibe is walking through that door anytime soon, just based on the comments you hear from Jim Boeheim and the rest of the coaches. And it doesn't sound like he's going to be ready to play anytime soon. So they're going to have to figure this out without Barama. And they've yet to be able to do that to this point.
Steve, do you think that Marek is the answer at the five. Like, honestly, like we've played this game for a long time now. It's not working. You know, we hear after every game when they get out rebounded by 12, 18, 16, that the other guys aren't physical enough. And then we put Marek out there. Marek can take the elbows. Yes, we've learned he can take the punch, but he's obviously not helping on the boards.
Okay, so, and you and I were texting about this a little bit over the weekend, and we wanted to save it for the air, so we can go through this. Do I think that Marek is the best? Is the question, is he the best option at the five for this team? Is that the question?
I guess it's the question. And if he is the best option on this team at the five, and you've got two guys that have been in the program for a year that aren't ready to even take any minutes, that's a serious problem.
Yeah. So you said is he the answer? So I think that he's the best answer that you have, right? I mean, it's not ideal. It's certainly not an ideal situation for Marek to have to play 40 minutes at the five. It's not an ideal situation for him to play 25 minutes at the five. The ideal scenario is that Barama is healthy enough to play at least half the game, and Marek, you know, is at his natural position, the forward position for when Barama's in the game, and then moves to the five when Barama's not in the game. That's not possible right now. Barama's been hurt. We don't know when he's coming back. So if you're asking me, is he the best solution they have at that position? My answer is yes. And I think you're going to continue to see them lose the battle on the boards, and they have to hope that what he provides from an offensive perspective, and that lineup with him at the five, they have to make up for it at the other end. That you're gonna take your lumps on the backboards. You hope you keep it close, keep the differential within single digits, and then make up for it on the other end. Now, in the first three losses, Paulie, they were able to do that to some degree. I mean, they got hammered on the glass against Rutgers, North Carolina, and Pitt that first time around. In all of those games, were in doubt until the very, very end. You know, I can't say they're all one possession games because the final score was not indicative of that. But essentially they were. A possession here or there could have changed the outcome of any of those three games. That was not the case, obviously, on Saturday. They lost the battle on the boards by 12, but, that just was one of many factors of why they got blown out. He's their best option at center because the other guys, in my opinion, they just don't look ready. And I know you and I were going back and forth over the weekend about why is that. We can talk about why that is, but I think Marek, yes, I think you want Marek in the game over Jesse. I think you certainly want Marek in the game over John Bol. And Frank, he's been out. He hasn't practiced. We don't know when he's coming back. And again, same thing with Barama. So, and we can talk more about Marek, and we probably should, in that, you know, he took five shots in that first game against Pittsburgh. He took six shots on Saturday against Pittsburgh. And he did get to the free throw line. He finished in double figures. But and we can talk more about Barek. I think he needs to be more aggressive. I think he's their best answer at the center spot. And you're right. They're going to continue to lose the battle on the glass. But he needs to be more aggressive because when he gets the ball in his hands, generally, offensively, good things happen. Whether he gets to the free throw line, whether he sets up a teammate, whether he hits a 10-foot floater. He's got a better offensive game than I think he gives himself credit for. So I would like to see him be more aggressive. But to answer your initial question, yes, I think of the options that we know are at Jim Boeheim's disposal at the center spot, I do think Marek is the best guy.
All right. Well, here's another thing for you, Steve. For 3 years, we now have been saying the exact same thing about Marek. He needs to be more aggressive, right? You know, we've been saying that since he was a freshman. He needs to be more aggressive. He needs to be more aggressive. We also came into this year, I mean, at center, you're expecting a full year out of Barama, which I don't believe has happened since he's been at Syracuse, where he hasn't been hurt at some point. So I don't know. I was totally against the free Jesse crowd last year, Atan and Rosie and all those guys saying Jesse needs to play more. He needs to play more. I mean, Marek by the end of the season is going to be useless if he's playing 40 minutes at the five. That's just my opinion on the thing. And they've got to come up with some answer at the five spot, and they got to do it pretty quick.
To your point, Marek played 39 minutes on Saturday. He finished with two rebounds. That's not going to get it done. And so you may say, well, one of the backup centers can't do any worse than that. And I understand where you're coming from, but there are two ends to the floor. And
I'm not saying take Marek off the floor.
Obviously. No, no, no. I know. But I'm saying when Marek is at the five, that is your best offensive lineup, right? Because if Marek isn't at the five, let's say Jesse's at the five, Marek's still on the floor. Now you're essentially playing five on four. Offensively, I'm saying Jesse's not a threat to score. You have him in there to help you on the glass.
Barama's not a threat
on the offensive end. That's fair. He's more of an option than Jesse is, I think, in terms of putbacks. Or I mean, he had five double doubles last year. I mean, he must have been able to score at least a little bit. And I know that he's not in there to score. Barama's in there to rebound. But I don't think he's necessarily a liability on the offensive end, like some of the bigger, you know, the backups bigs are in terms of Jesse and John Bull. And again, we haven't seen much of Frank. We have such a small sample size with him. It would be nice to see him on the floor, but we don't know when he's coming back. So I think the trade-off is too great. I think you need Marek to continue to do what he's doing, and you have to hope that you can make up for the loss. What you lose on the glass, you have to hope you can make up for that on the offensive end. And in three of the four losses, Syracuse darn near did that. Right. You know, if they didn't lose the battle on the boards by 16 in those games, but it was 9 or 10, maybe they win, you know, two of those games. They almost made up for it, but, you know, Saturday, they, and that's why I say there are two ends to the floor. I mean, Syracuse couldn't make a shot in the second half. Couldn't get a rebound, you know, couldn't get a stop. It was one of those games, as Bayham said. You're going to have one of those games, and it was. I mean, nothing went right the final 10 minutes or so of that game, and Pitt blew their doors off.
Yeah, I also don't think we're at a – I understand your offensive argument, but there's no – Marek is going to get the ball no matter where he plays. The five spot isn't going to be have the offense run through it if it's not Marek. And I mean, at this point, don't you have to at least try? Do you have to try Jesse? I mean, he was in for what, 2 minutes last game?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know,
I don't know. And I know where you're going with this.
I hate this argument.
Devil's advocate here, Paul. Yeah, go ahead.
I hate this argument too because it lines you up for a Coach Boeheim beating about not knowing what players should play and get your own team and all this other stuff. But it's like, this ain't working. You know, North Carolina and Pitt dominated them on the board.
Now, I will say this, to play devil's advocate, not to give Syracuse excuses, but in terms of the rebounding thing, North Carolina statistically is the best rebounding team in the conference. Pittsburgh is statistically the second best rebounding team in the conference. So it didn't work against two of the better rebounds. You know what I mean? I understand that, and that makes sense, that not having Barama there is going to be exasperated against the two best rebounding teams in the conference, and it was, and to their credit, those two teams took advantage, and they won those games. You're saying, don't you at least have to see, though, what Jesse can provide? And I guess my response to that would be, you know, we have seen him here and there for a year and a half, and
if he's not better, that's a problem.
I don't think he's the answer. Well, okay, yeah, and so who shoulders the blame for that? I mean, who takes responsibility?
They threw him out there last year.
Yeah,
yeah.
But what did he do? I mean, You know, you even said last year that you were not among the free Jesse crowd, that you were not impressed by him. You can't be impressed by him this year because we haven't seen him all that much. I
feel like it's going to take a toll on Marek doing this for a full season.
That's fair.
I mean, I don't know what you do. Should I say something positive before we go to our first break?
Sure, why not?
Quincy is really good. Have you seen a player make a jump like he has? His shot's falling. He's pretty
impressive.
Good.
And I know at the beginning of the season, we were discussing one of the first shows we did when the season started. Seth and I were talking about, well, who's the best player on this team? There's no doubt. I mean, Quincy is the best player on this team. And it's not even up for debate right now.
Right.
And if he keeps playing like this, he's going to be playing in the NBA next year, or at least have the opportunity to play in the NBA next year if he wants to. He has been fantastic. And he knows his game, and he's added the outside shot to that game. But his ability to attack and play aggressive and play physical and get to the rim and rebound on both ends. And we saw in that first Pitt meeting exactly what he means to this team when he was out with foul trouble. They go from up 18, and then all of a sudden, the lead evaporates and they end up losing it. But I think you could make a strong case that he is the most improved player in the ACC. We'll have to see. There's a long way to go, obviously, but he's put himself in position to be the front runner for that award. He certainly would have my vote at this point. He has been absolutely outstanding. That's certainly a positive way to wrap up, I guess, this first segment. But I know that not everybody's positive about what's going on with this team. 1-3 here in 2021, 0-3 in conference play since the calendar flipped to 2021. So we want to hear from you. 315-437-7644. We're talking Cuse basketball this first hour. We're back after this on ESPN Radio.
On Twitch, Cuse Sports Talk and ESPN Radio 97.7 at 100.1.
All right, Stephen Fonte, Paulie Sibilia back with you on a Monday edition of Orange Nation. We're with you up until 2 o'clock. 315-437-7644 as we go back to the phone lines. We've got Pat in Syracuse up next on the show. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. So something I'd like to bring up is when Syracuse played North Carolina, you're not going to play many teams that are 3 to 4 centers deep and they have the horses that they have at center. So I don't, with Syracuse being thin at the center, at the five spot, I don't expect them to be able to beat a team like North Carolina. I think you got to hang in there. You guys kind of alluded to it before that. It's tough when you're driving at North Carolina and you try to get them in foul trouble, but oh wait, then they should put out another five that is just as big and just as talented as the guy ahead of them. It's hard to get those guys off the floor so you can tap into their roster a little bit more. So I don't really blame that loss on them. It was a close game. Syracuse played them really good for what they had. Marek, at this point, he is who he is. You take what you can get from him. You know he's going to hustle. You know he's going to dive on the floor. You know he's going to be that bull the best he can. But he's not as aggressive as you would like him to be. But that's not going to change from last year or the year before to all of a sudden now. He's not going to have this random U-turn, and he's just going to go right and be aggressive and start pushing people around on the inside. That's just not his M.O. In terms of the other guys, I'd like to see Kadari develop a shot. If he can develop a shot, the ceiling for him is ridiculous. It's already ridiculous, but he's just got to develop that shot so he can play to his game, which is, like you guys had mentioned, drive. And then, I'm not hitting the panic button, but it's very young in the season, but they got to develop some of their five guys, and I know you said Frank is injured still, and you got Brahma, so it's tough. But these other guys, these other young guys, they gotta play hard in practice and say, "Hey, put me on that floor because I deserve to be out there." This is an opportunity for those guys who may not see the floor that all of a sudden now have an opportunity to prove themselves. Thanks, guys.
I appreciate checking in, Pat. We said it when Barama was injured, right, Paulie, that, in the opener against Bryant, we said, all right, the opportunity is there. The door is open for someone to step up and take Barama's minutes. And Jesse had an opportunity, John Bull, Frank, even Robert Braswell. We saw Woody Newton. Woody was the one of the five that kind of emerged as somebody who started to get minutes. And then he was out, and Robert, played because, Woody hadn't practiced after the COVID pause and contact tracing and all that. And so Robert was given an opportunity, and then he made the most of the opportunity. And then those are the two guys you feel the most comfortable with. The other three, the three centers, just never made the most of their opportunity. John Bull, we saw for limited minutes here and there. he didn't do much. Jesse, same thing. You know, Frank, I think we were all intrigued by Frank at the very beginning of the season and his athleticism. But now he's been out and we don't know exactly when he's going to be ready to play again. So it is a tough spot. I asked Eric the question about whether or not he thought rebounding was going to be an issue all season long. I tend to agree with him. I think rebounding is going to be an issue all season long. I don't think this was just a byproduct of they played against Carolina, they played against Pitt, they played against Rutgers, and they struggled on the glass. I think we're going to see that this is a problem all season long. And Miami, by the way, coming in tomorrow, fifth best rebounding margin in the conference. Again, Carolina 1, Pitt 2, Miami 5. So another pretty good rebounding team coming into the Dome tomorrow. Syracuse dead last in the conference in terms of the amount of rebounds they give up per game. And I don't think that shocks anyone. So I don't think this is just the opponents. I think this is going to be a reoccurring problem. And the games where they rebound well, like they did against Georgetown, you know, it's not a coincidence, Paulie, they won that game. When they don't rebound well, I think it's good. You know, that number is going to be so indicative, I think, of the end result, at least for the near future with this team.
Am I old school to hear a caller say that that's just not who Marek is? He's not going to ever be that guy. Like, if you see your team needs it, though, aren't you supposed to do that? If you're, you know, he's not going to be more aggressive on offense. He's not going to, you know, like, he's got to. Doesn't that click in your head at some point?
Yeah. So he's not a guy who's going to be banging down low, right? I mean, he's a guy that...
No.
That's not his strength. Brute strength is not his strength.
No.
Physicality is not his strength. He's got some finesse to him, though. I do think he needs to be more aggressive offensively, and I know I've said it. I said it on the postgame show Saturday. I'm saying it to you again today, Paulie, that he needs to take more shots. He needs the ball in his hands more, I think, on the offensive end, because when he has the ball... good things happen, whether he puts the ball on the floor, creates for himself, creates for somebody else, gets to the free throw line. But taking 5 shots in the first meeting, 6 shots, I just don't think that's enough, especially when you're not making threes. I mean, they were 3 for 22 from 3-point range. You know, that was a game where Marek could have done a little bit more. He creates a mismatch on the offensive end. Why not take advantage of that mismatch more? And so I do think he needs to be a little more selfish.
Yeah. It's got to click at some point. I feel like we're beating a dead horse because we've been saying that for years. He's got to be more aggressive. Shoot the ball. There was a point, too, last year where he was running the break. You know, like, he'd grab the rebound and go coast to coast. And that hasn't happened this year. Well, he hasn't grabbed rebounds, but it's just a matter of it's a matter of being more aggressive and wanting to be, is the way I see it. It's just he's not... it's not happening.
I mean, some players just they're not selfish, and I'm not saying that if he takes 8 or 10 shots, it's not selfish. It's helping the team. But some guys have a heart. I mean, Tyler Lydon was an example, I think, Paulie, a good example of this, where you wanted Tyler Lydon to take more shots than he actually took, but it wasn't in his DNA. It wasn't in his to look for his shot. As much as it was to make the right basketball play, for lack of a better term. And I think Marek is a lot like that, that it's not in his DNA to, well, I got to get my shots. But I think that the more shots he takes, I do think it ends up helping this team. The more opportunities he has helps this team because he's a good player, and generally good things happen when the ball's in his hand. So I do think he's got to look for his shot a little bit more. Let's go back to the phone lines. One more quick call here. As we're up against the top of the hour, Jake in Syracuse is up next on the show. Hey, Jake.
Hey, guys. I'll be real quick. I've taken to calling Marek Skinny McHale because he's got so many – his footwork in the post is just great. So you're absolutely right. He needs to have the ball in his hands more. And one thing about Joe Girard, you know, they said he put on about 20 pounds of muscle over the summer, and he just has not learned how to play at that body weight. He just can't carry that kind of weight for what he needs to do on the floor. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, I do think that's a good observation. I know we talked about that early in the season, that he looked different. And yeah, that's what we were told, that he had put on muscle over the season, during the offseason, getting ready for this season, to be, you know, a little bit bigger and be able to withstand the, you know, the pounding that you're going to take in the ACC. I don't know if that's the reason. You know, maybe it's you know, one reason or one factor, but for, you know, whatever it is, he does look like a different player. And so I think that is a good observation from Jake. I can't imagine that's the only reason, but maybe it's, you know, it's a reason why he's off to a slow start. I mean, there's no way around that. All right, let's take a time out here. We've got Heather Prusak from WIVB in Buffalo set to join us as we kick off hour number two next on ESPN Radio.
On Twitch, Q Sports Talk and ESPN Radio 97.7 at 100.1.
All right, Stephen Fonts and Paulie Stabilia back with you on a Monday edition of Orange Nation. We were going to talk NFL last segment. We ended up talking some SU hoops, so we'll get to the NFL here. Final Four in the NFL, Paulie, and you look at the quarterbacks, a couple pretty good matchups we've got. Rodgers, Brady, and Allen Mahomes. And, you know, those who say it doesn't take a quarterback to win in the NFL, there's your evidence that it does. You need a quarterback to win in the NFL. You need a quarterback to make a run at a Super Bowl, and all four of these teams have them. And finally, my Buffalo Bills have found their quarterback, and that's why they've gotten this far.
Yeah, can we play pick a Bills fan's brain really quick?
Sure.
Can I ask you questions that the world needs to know for Bills fans? During the Bills game the other day, when the kick is missed late in the game, do you get that sinking Bills fan feeling that, oh no, it's happening again?
I did not.
Oh, really?
I did not get. Yeah, no, really. I did not. And I truly feel like this team is different. And I felt that for, you know, a little while now, certainly the last couple of weeks. You know, the Colts game had got interesting at the end. And that was a game that previous Bills teams would have found a way to lose. No, I didn't panic. There was no panic at all Saturday night for me. You know, when they got to the half and it was 3-3, as poorly as the Bills played and the fact that it was still a tie game, I felt really good about their chances, knowing they were going to get the ball coming out of the locker room to start the second half. I felt good 3-3 at halftime. So that gives you an idea a little bit about my mindset.
Wow, that is impressive. Because I'm always a doom and gloom guy. My favorite team is going to find a way.
Really? I had no idea, Paulie. I had no idea.
To blow it. They will find a way to blow it and rip my heart out and stomp on it. All right, now rolling into this Chiefs game, you want Mahomes in, right? You want to beat them at their best.
I do. Yeah, I do. And there were a couple of people were asking me in the chat on Twitch, on Q Sports Talk on Twitch, about whether or not I was rooting for the Browns or the Chiefs. I'll be honest with you. I was rooting for the Browns when the game started. When Mahomes left, I did not want the Browns to come back and win because Mahomes was out. Because then it would be, well, the Bills caught a break and... I'm glad Mahomes and the Chiefs made it. I fully expect him to play. I mean, obviously, we'll learn it as the week goes along. But
you know he's going to play.
You know, yes.
It went,
he's going to play.
It went from a concussion to a tweaked nerve, right?
Right. And Andy Reid said yesterday after the game that he passed all the concussion protocol tests and he was just being observed. I fully expect him to play. And yes, I want him to play. And I realize that hurts my team's chances, but... no, I don't want any, I don't want to be handed a trip to the Super Bowl. I want them to go out and earn it. So if they lose the game, so be it. It's been a hell of a run, and it feels like this team is good again. I don't think this was just a one-hit wonder. I think the Bills are, I think they're legit again, and will be good again for years to come. So whatever happens Sunday happens, but yeah, I want Patrick Mahomes out there, sure.
All right, let's take out our crystal balls and say the Bills beat the Chiefs. Do you want to face Tom Brady?
You know that you do. Of course. Yes. Yeah, he's been a thorn in Buffalo Bills fans' sides for 20 years. Yes, of course you want Brady. And that's, if you're the TV executives, there are no bad matchups here, right? I mean, if you've got Rodgers, Mahomes, or Rodgers against Allen, or Mahomes against Tom, I mean, there are no bad combinations, right? These are all great matchups. But Bills, Brady, and I know I'm a little biased, I'm a Bills fan, but of course I want to see Tom Brady and I want to beat him. And if they were to go to that game and lose to Tom Brady, it would be the most devastating of the five losses.
Right.
So, yeah, give me Bills Brady. I'd sign up for that right now in a heartbeat.
As an average football fan, I would take great joy in either outcome of a Bills Bucks, Super Bowl. I would love it either way. If the Bills lost to Brady, to see you, and I'm not saying this as a jerk, kind of, but to watch you and Brent be so deflated by a Tom Brady loss would kind of be enjoyable. And watching Tom Brady lose in the Super Bowl to the Bills would be great also for football.
That would be great.
So
you want to see me suffer? Is that what I just heard, Paulie?
Maybe
our
a
first
little.
Day doing the show together?
Maybe a little.
Yeah.
I've been working with you for a long time, Steve. But
yeah, I know. That's
I mean, it would, because it is kind of fitting for the Bills. Like, it would be so.
It would be worse than Scott Norwood. It would,
really?
I mean, to lose the braid, I think so. To lose the braid to that guy. I mean, and you know, maybe it's recency bias and it was so long ago. Yes, to lose to that guy again in the Super Bowl and for it to be the, you know, the fifth and, you know, everybody's saying, well, the Bills can't get it done. Yes, that would, to me anyway, that would be worse than the other four. I can't, you know, I can't stand Brady. He's the best of all time. I get it. He's the GOAT. Okay. Congratulate. He's going to his 14th conference championship game. How is that even possible? but I can't stand him. And for the Bills to get there and to lose to him, that would be the worst of the five.
All right, I got one last football question for you. You're okay. Watching that Chiefs game yesterday. Andy Brady, or Andy Reid, calling that play with Chad Henne.
Go for it.
On fourth down.
Yeah.
One of the best calls ever, right? Like, that is the biggest sack ever to make that call. Like, holy cow. I was stunned watching that.
I was stunned, too. I didn't think, so I was watching the game with my daughter. And I said, you know, they're probably just going to try to draw them off sides and they're going to punt. And I was stunned when they snapped the ball. Now, if Henne doesn't get to fourth and inches, I mean, that was a hell of a play
right.
on third down when it's third and long. And he was just like, you know, I'm going, you know, I'm not sliding. I'm diving for the first down marker. I mean, that was a great play by Henne to make it close on fourth down to give them the option. Because if that's fourth and two or fourth and three, you know, they're punting. I was stunned that they snapped the ball. And that just shows you, you know, Andy Reid has, you know, the utmost confidence in his players. And
not just snap, you know, it, throw the ball.
Well, right. Not just snap it, but, you know, your backup quarterback's in the game. I mean, it was a pretty safe play that they ran. But still, I mean, that's a gutsy call with Mahomes out there to have, you know, Chad Henne running the show and to run that play. You know, the risk factor, you know, is multiplied by 10. So, yes, I was stunned that they snapped the ball. I thought they were just going to, you know, try to draw him offside and punt.
All right. I'm done asking you questions. I've run out of course.
We'll take our final timeout and then we'll be done with today's show right after this on ESPN Radio.